views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
Good morning, this is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM, which is a little squeaky. And we are with Supervisor Art Bassett, who is the supervisor in the town of Ankrum, so thank you for joining us. We're here with Deborah Gilbert, who is my co-host. I'm Victor Mandolia. So why don't we get right into it? One of the things that I think has been noticeable is that you've been really focused on the finances of Columbia County and making sure that the fiscal house is in order and at least waving the flag if you thought that things were not. So maybe you could tell us how things are going on the county level and where you see things going fiscally.
Sure. I think the county is making progress in understanding the numbers better. Mm-hmm. Chairman Grattan has set up a fiscal oversight committee that meets periodically and recently on a monthly basis to understand the budget and the various financial moving parts. I think this is a new departure because historically the county has not spent a lot of time with supervisors going over the numbers, and that's been one of the reasons why there has been some concern expressed by supervisors as to what's happening with the cash position and how the revenues and the expenses relate. I think over time what has happened is we got used to having a fairly substantial cash portion of the fund balance, mm-hmm. which is basically the county's reserve account that's sitting in the checking account as cash. Probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, we had $20 million in cash that made us fairly well suited and prepared for almost any financial contingency. Mm-hmm. But over the last 5, 6, 7 years, that cash reserve has been used, partially because of the economic meltdown in 2008, which drove some property tax issues, which created some increase in delinquent taxes. The state and the federal government slowed down their reimbursements to the county, which caused the county to use up more of its own reserves. And I think in the last year or two, we've become acutely sensitive to the idea that our cash was running fairly close to an inadequate amount of money. Mm-hmm. I think in having talked to the county treasurer in the last couple of weeks, we probably are in really good shape today because many of the towns have been submitting their county property tax receipts. So we're very well funded now, but I think we ended last year, according to what the county is telling us, with probably $4 million in the bank, down from maybe $20 million 5, 6, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that more and more people are spending time focused on this, trying to understand how to reverse this trend and rebuild the reserves.
Right.
The bad news is, of course, we are very short on cash on a regular basis toward the end of the year, but that should trigger more frugality and more concern and caution in our spending.
It should, but does it?
I think it has been. Yeah. I think the supervisors are focusing in on the important financial issues. The county is faced with a fairly significant problem of unfunded mandates, as you probably know.
Right.
There are probably a half a dozen programs that the state and the federal government requires that we provide that they don't provide 100% reimbursement for. And the county is not in a position to say no. We just have to spend the money. So we either have to raise taxes or cut back in other areas. Mm-hmm. So while we spend $150 million a year, the discretionary portion of that is probably less than half, maybe even a third of that amount of money. So you don't have an awful lot of discretion in what you have to spend as a county.
Right. So maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the large capital projects first, and then I'd like to go back and maybe talk about some of your ideas for how could we do better. But one of the biggest issues recently has been the airport and the potential expansion of the airport. Maybe you could tell us, and I know that you are the chair of the airport committee, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about where things are at and what you think about where we're going with that.
Sure. Well, number one, it's not an expansion of the airport. We're not talking about that at all. We're talking about an expansion of the safety zone. Mm-hmm. On the north end of the runway. They call it Runway 21. By way of background, as you and most of our listeners probably know, the airport was set up in the mid-60s. It was originally a 3,500-foot runway. It was expanded. The runway was expanded to 4,200 feet in 1972, and then nothing happened until 1988 when the runway was expanded again to 5,000 feet. And then again in 1992 to 5,350 feet. So we have had for the last 22 years a 5,350-foot runway, and there's no talk now about expanding that anymore. Mm-hmm. But the FAA does have recommendations for airports like ours related to the safety zones at the end of runways designed to protect airplanes and people. And they have recommended that we implement this safety zone. So the original plan that was put forward in the 2003 Airport Master Plan proposed acquiring land related to the Meadow Greens Golf Course and expand the safety zone in that direction. There were efforts over the period 2003 to 2013 to work out a deal with the owner of the Meadow Greens so that we could either buy the land or buy easements on the land, and no deal could be struck, so the county started to consider in 2013, the possibility of eminent domain. This created some concern among residents and supervisors. And in the fall, late October, Chairman Grattan appointed a committee to take a look at the alternatives that we had that would allow the county to get into compliance with FAA regulations at the least cost and with the least amount of disruption to the neighbors. Mm-hmm. So we've been working on this since the beginning of November. And I think about a month ago, the committee kind of coalesced around the idea that we could shorten the runway from 5,300 to 5,000 feet, move it south, and come into compliance without acquiring any Meadow Greens land. Or if we had to acquire some, it would be a couple of acres, which would not disrupt the golf course at all. And the committee feels pretty comfortable that this is the right solution. Everybody we've talked to who is an airport expert or an airplane expert tells us that with a 5,000-foot runway, the same planes that are using the runway today at 5,300 feet, the jets, the corporate jets that are mm-hmm. coming in now, can easily use the 5,000-foot runway without any disruption. Mm-hmm. And we think this is a pretty good idea. So we basically have this plan on the table. We were about to vote on the resolution at the last meeting on February 12th. When Carmen Nero, who is the principal owner of the Meadow Greens, came to the committee meeting and proposed four new options for the committee to consider, including buying the entire Meadow Greens, a couple of alternatives related to either paying more for the easements that we wanted and the land that we wanted, and a final option of basically just doing nothing and letting him go about his business without any further action. Mm-hmm. The committee is considering these four alternatives. We're going to meet again on Monday, the 24th, to talk about this and see where we come out.
So some people think that, you know, he has really wanted to sell the property all this time, but you, now that the committee seems to be coalescing around another option that doesn't really include him at the last minute, this sort of this Hail Mary pass, do you feel that it's, you know, that it's sort of hate to characterize it as desperation, but I mean, is that what's going on here? Or
no, I don't think so. I think Mr. Nero provided four reasonably balanced and thoughtful alternatives, ranging from buy the entire property to just go away, do mm-hmm. nothing.
Right.
And all four of them would work for him, and all four of them could work for the county. I think we just have to talk it through and figure out whether or not in any of his proposals there is the kernel of a better idea than what the airport committee has come mm-hmm. up with so far.
Okay.
Prior to the formation of the airport committee, the public was largely in the dark about dealings with the airport. Why was that? You know, I know I heard occasionally at the Financial Committee or Economic Development Committee meetings reference to the airport, but it seemed to be a very mysterious subject to an outsider.
Well, I think the airport over the years has suffered from a lack of attention. There was never an airport committee. It was always either part of the Public Works Committee or part of the Economic Development Committee. And all the work that was going on by the consultants and by the Department of Public Works was basically going on in the background without a forum or a framework for an airport-related discussion. Mm-hmm. I think when Chairman Grattan put together the airport committee, we finally had a forum where the airport was the topic, as opposed to being just a brief summary report in another committee. So I think it was the lack of a forum that really kept most of the information about the airport from reaching the public in an organized and timely way.
A couple of years ago, I heard Economic Development Commissioner Ken Flood mention the need to run plumbing water supply pipes to the airport. Is that still a need? And that sounded like it was a $9 million project or...
Yeah, I think there are water and septic issues in Commerce Park and at the airport that are infrastructure constraints that limit the growth at both Commerce Park and at the airport. And I know over the years there have been efforts to deal with that. I'm not really familiar with what all the options are or what the costs are.
But that wouldn't be within the range of subjects addressed by the airport committee?
No, at this point, the airport committee has a very narrow focus, which is to figure out what the best safety area alternatives are and to make a recommendation to the board. If the board chooses to expand our charter or to extend our charter to more airport-related things, then we can deal with some of these other things. But right now, we are very narrowly focused and are trying to reach a conclusion that we can share with the board.
Perhaps if there was if it was like airport and / Commerce Park committee that really paid attention more to what happens there, that would be something that would make sense, you think?
Well, the Economic Development Committee really has oversight over Commerce Park.
I see.
The airport is the airport, and I think there is probably a role going forward for a focused airport committee to deal not just with urgent issues like the safety area, but longer-term issues like, you know, the expansion of facilities and infrastructure at the airport. There are a lot of people who think the airport is just an undeveloped asset,
right,
and that because we've never had an airport manager and we haven't really had an airport committee, that the airport has not become what it could have been had we paid more attention to it.
Right.
There's also a county organization called the Columbia County Economic Development Corporation, and apparently they approved a capital improvement plan for the airport that's over, you know, $13.6 million. I read that somewhere, and on this corporation sits Mrs. Richards, who is the wife of the owner of the airport, and I wonder, is that a conflict of interest?
Well, number one, it wasn't the CEDC that produced those numbers. It was the 2011 airport business plan that was commissioned by the county and done by a group of consultants. They projected a potential of $13 million worth of possible capital improvements, none of which have been approved. This was simply a recommendation. And Mrs. Richards is the daughter of the CEO of
Richmore,
not the wife.
Okay.
So as it was coming down about the airport, I think that you really were troubled by the fact that there was not, it didn't seem like that the paperwork from FAA was there, and that we were really dealing with actual requirements of the FAA. And I think that that's sort of been satisfied for you now. But were you displeased with the amount of, or the ability to have information forthcoming, and that people had to really go and look for the information about the airport?
Well, you know, what was going on because there was no airport committee and no focal point and nobody really in charge as an airport manager, there was no go-to person on the airport. Ken Flood had been given the responsibility to deal with airport business development activities only, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago. So he was basically operating with a charter to do what he could to encourage and enhance airport economic development. Mm-hmm. The Public Works Department over the years has been responsible for all the infrastructure. So there was nobody that you could go to ask business-related questions and get really clear answers, because right. there was no continuity of oversight at the airport. So, yes, I did ask a lot of questions, and, yes, I was frustrated by not getting a lot of clear answers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just the way the county had been managing the airport over the years. Nobody had a lot of good answers.
Right.
So when the chairman appointed the airport committee, we had an opportunity to kind of dig into this, pull all the pieces together, ask the various experts to come in and talk to us. And in a couple of months, I think we got a pretty clear picture of what the facts were.
Mm-hmm. There had been unearthed, I guess, this like old grant proposal where they were really talking about an expansion of the airport. And I think a lot of people were really concerned when Ken Flood kept answering, I don't know. But then there was this grant proposal that he had signed and put forward that really talked about a major expansion at the airport. And was that something that was of concern to you?
And he referred to it as a regional airport, which would indicate a certain amount of ramping up of air traffic and activity of that sort in Columbia County.
Yeah, I think Ken has taken a lot of heat for this unfairly, because what had happened early in 2012, in the spring of 2012, is this 2011 airport business plan was presented to the Board of Supervisors, which proposed a rebranding of the airport to be the Hudson Valley Regional Airport. It proposed the $13 million worth of investments over a five-year period. And all this was laid out in a document mm-hmm. that was presented to the Board of Supervisors, which the Board of Supervisors, I think in the spring, approved.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Ken's basis for applying for a grant that was designed to provide more septic and water mm-hmm. resources and infrastructure to Commerce Park and the airport, and he used the grant or the report that we had approved just a couple of months earlier as the basis for stating that this was designed to help promote the possibility of an upper
right.
Hudson Valley Regional Airport. So he was doing what was perfectly logical and reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I think in retrospect, when people in 2013 discovered that this had happened without understanding all the facts, they sort of pointed fingers and said, see, somebody's doing something here that's just not right, when in fact he was doing something that had been approved by the board.
Right.
Was that included in the thousands of pages of documents that came out in a FOIL request made earlier this year?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Don't know.
So you don't feel that there is this any misdeeds or anything that untoward that went down between the old grant proposal and this current, the current scenario at the airport?
No. I think there's plenty to be unhappy about in terms of how the process has been managed, but I don't think singling that out is terribly relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly, you know, Ken was doing something based on an approved plan by the Board of Supervisors,
right.
and why he's being criticized for that, I can only assume is because people want to kind of discredit the process.
Right, right. Do you have anything else on the airport?
Yeah, there's been some talk about whether the airport's losing money or making money, and I guess Art Bear calculated about it earns about $100,000 in cash, but another person said that it's lost about $182,000 between 2003 and 2012, and that would indicate a loss of about $20,000 a year.
The answer is yes.
It's losing money.
No, it's losing money, and it's not losing money.
Okay.
In 2008, the county renegotiated its lease with Richmore, and based on that 2008 lease, we are receiving more revenue related to jet fuel sales. And when you take jet fuel sales and sales tax related items related to the airport, since 2008, the airport has been making money on a year-to-year basis. Prior to 2008, we were probably losing $20,000 to $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But we are now more or less making $20,000 to $30,000 a year.
Right.
If you look at the history of the airport, going back to 1966, we've probably lost a lot of money, especially since we've spent about $16 million of public money on capital improvements at the airport. And I don't think anybody would argue that there's been any way to recoup that $16 million. So it depends on your time frame, and it depends on whether you're including the capital investments or not. If you're looking at the most recent five-year period, we're breaking even, making some money. I think Mr. Baer figured we've made $75,000 in the last 5 years. If you look at the last 10 years, we've probably been losing money in that period of time. And if you look at the last 50 years, we've probably lost $15, $16 million, if you count the public money investments as part of the cash flow.
You know, everybody suffered economic setbacks in recent years, but there has been an assumption of growth that is probably driven things like the capital improvement plan. And I suppose when the supervisors decide what to do with the airport, they're going to be driven both by the desire to protect and improve infrastructure we already have, maybe encourage growth. Maybe this could be a you know, catalyst to business, but you don't want the wrong kind of business. So you don't want to like encourage too much growth, right?
Well, the airport is the airport. And Malin Richards has said there's not much he or anybody can do to stimulate traffic at the airport. People fly to this airport because they want to do something in Columbia County near the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are things going on in the county, that'll attract more aircraft operations. If there are not things going on or things stay the way they are, then you'll have the kind of traffic you have now. If you look back at the history of the forecasts for the airport, if you go back to the 1988 master plan, there was a prediction that we would be having 50,000 aircraft takeoffs and landings a year, with 125 based aircraft by 2010 or 2005 or something like that.
Wow.
Today, actually, we have between 5,000 and 15,000 operations, not 50,000. And I think Mr. Richards told me there were between 25 and 30 aircraft based there, not 125. So it's really hard to predict what the airport is going to kind of attract by way of economic growth or operations, because we just don't know what the county is going to be like 3 to 5 years from now or 10 years from now.
Right.
More important than the airport is what happens around the county to attract people to the airport. The second big thing about airport development that you've got to keep in mind is that we don't have the facilities at that airport now to attract a lot more aircraft traffic. There are inadequate hangar facilities. The terminal is in need of repair. You don't really have the infrastructure in septic or water to attract more businesses or more aircraft-related operations.
Mm-hmm.
So until we solve these infrastructure problems at the airport, it's not likely the airport is going to be an engine for growth. It's been there for 50, 60 years as a potential catalyst. But if you look at the history of the county, it really hasn't contributed that much, which doesn't mean to say it won't in the future. But so far, it hasn't for a variety of reasons that probably don't relate to the airport as much as to the surrounding economy.
Right.
I have one more question, and that is one of the members of the airport committee wanted to go into executive session to discuss certain aspects of the plan. And I wonder, what are you dealing with that would require going into executive session?
Nothing.
Okay.
And we didn't go into executive session.
No, I know.
But there would be, for example, if we were to start talking about possibly negotiating a deal with Mr. Nero to do this or to do that, that kind of thing would be the kind of thing you would go into executive session for.
Mm-hmm.
So this is At Issue, where we are with Supervisor Art Basson from the town of Ankrum, who is the chair of the Airport Committee on the Board of Supervisors. And we're talking about fiscal issues. We've just been focusing on the airport, but one of the other big capital projects that is looming is Pine Haven Nursing Home. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about where things stand with that and what your thoughts are about whether we should go forward on it.
As probably everybody knows, Pine Haven is the nursing home that the county operates in Philmont. The proposal was made probably 5, 6, 7 years ago to build a new facility there. The facility we have is nearing the end of its useful life, and a committee was formed to look at the possibility of building a new one. A plan has been developed to spend, I think, around $30, $35 million on building a new Pine Haven facility. And this plan has been under scrutiny and discussion for multiple years, ever since I've been on the board, since 2010 anyway. The question that we really have to deal with is, number one, can the county actually afford to do this? Can we spend that kind of money and pay it back over a period of 20 years? We would borrow the money, and presumably the state would reimburse us via some mechanism if we spent that money. And the out-of-pocket for the county probably would not be the $35 million plus interest, but maybe 10% of that amount of money. Mm-hmm. Given the dramatic change in county and state finances and the uncertainty in how medical costs and nursing home costs are going to get reimbursed, a lot of people have been asking the question, do we really need to do this, and is the county really in a position to do this? I think everybody would agree that we want to preserve Pine Haven and the 120 beds in the county. The question is, what is the best way to do that, and is the county the best steward for that facility, or are there stronger management hands that we can put Pine Haven into for the benefit of the residents, of the employees, and of the taxpayer? And we don't have an answer to that yet. So I think Chairman Grattan has plans to, or I think has already set up a Pine Haven committee to deal with the question of, do we build a new one? Do we consider outsourcing the management of the facility to somebody else? Do we sell the facility? And we have probably a 6-month review of these issues. This is all complicated by the way the state and the federal government and insurance companies reimburse us for people who stay at Pine Haven. My understanding, based on the numbers that we've seen over the last couple of years, is Pine Haven is losing a couple of million dollars a year, maybe two, maybe $3 million. A lot of medical experts in this nursing home field predict that over the next 5, 10, 20 years, nursing homes like Pine more money as state and federal reimbursements either diminish or are redirected toward other forms of caring for seniors and folks who need nursing home kind of care. Mm-hmm. So there's an uncertainty as to what the financial operating impact is going to be on a year-to-year basis. I think what we need to be able to tell the county resident, the county taxpayer, and the Board of Supervisors is, if we choose to go forward with building this new $35 million facility, here's what the economic impact is going to be on the county taxpayer, not just of repaying that $35 million loan with interest, but also what the impact is going to be of funding the operating losses of the Pine Haven facility on a year-to-year basis. Mm-hmm. And until we know those numbers, it's really hard for a supervisor to say, yes, I support this, or no, I don't.
Right.
And even if the numbers turn out to be pretty bad, meaning it's going to cost a lot more than anybody can imagine to do this, there still may be a very strong public policy reason to do it and to provide these facilities
right
to seniors in the county, unless somebody else can do it better than we can do it for less money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, while the county's been in this business for a long time, there are private and not-for-profit organizations who do this with multiple facilities who probably do it better than we do.
I know the county looked at outsourcing its home health care program a couple of years ago. Has that come up for review also?
Yeah, we decided to sell that business because we could not make it work financially, and others did that as we did, but better. They could do it. They could provide the same quality service at much less cost.
That was also a money-losing operation.
Yes, it was. As I recall, it was losing between $500,000 and $1 million a year. The need for those kinds of services exist. It's just a question of, are counties the best suited for delivering those services, or is the private sector, either the for-profit or the not-for-profit nursing home operator, better equipped and more capable than we are of providing these services to our residents at a more reasonable cost?
And is there a possibility of building this new facility but having somebody else manage it? Is that on the table?
That's definitely a possibility, but I think before we start talking about that, we need to understand all the underlying economics and all the underlying alternatives.
Right.
Because if I could tell you, if I knew that there were operators out there who wanted to operate our facility and who could do it better and less expensively and provide better care for our residents, that would be something we would need to explore.
Mm-hmm.
But we would need to be very certain that we're getting what we think we're getting. We don't want to have an operator come in and basically take the Pine Haven facility and gut it in order to make some money. We've got to be very careful about who we partner up with if we decide to go that direction. My point is, we just don't know the answers to these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have the same interests in mind. We want the residents to get the best possible care.
Because we have the oldest county in the state, I think, right? Isn't the median age in Columbia County the oldest in the state?
Probably so. Probably so. We do have a lot of seniors that need this kind of service. Interestingly enough, though, things I've been reading about indicate that nursing homes spend a lot more of their bed capacity on short-term stays, not long-term stays.
Right.
And that trend is going on. Counties around the state have been dealing with this issue, and many of them are getting out of this business.
Right.
One way or the other, either they're selling it or closing their facilities. But I think from our point of view, we need to find the strongest possible hands to place this in. If it's the county, so be it. We'll just have to be able to tell everybody.
It's going to cost this many dollars a year, and that's a service that we provide to our citizens, and that's the way it is.
And your taxes are going to go up by this amount of money to fund this, because people understand that. And if they agree with that, that's fine. If they don't agree with that, then you'll get a different board of supervisors.
Right.
But I think the important thing is a committee has been set up to focus on these issues and to find the facts and to basically present the arguments pro and con, either building a new facility or doing something else. We just don't know yet which way to go.
We just, in the paper today, was a story about the losing the home for the aged here in Hudson. So those are a number of other beds. I mean, it's not the same kind of services in general, but clearly we're losing beds for people who need long-term care, and that's something that we have to figure out, I guess.
Right.
One other project that is, I guess, nearing completion is the courthouse. Maybe you could tell us about where things stand with the courthouse and how things are going and whether it's on budget and that kind of thing.
I'm not that close to the courthouse project, except to know that it is close to completion. And based on the original specs and the original scope of work, I think they're coming in pretty much on budget.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some decisions to change the scope of work, to expand the scope of work in terms of heating systems and windows. So they may be over budget for that reason, but other than that, it's been extremely well done.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea when it can be reoccupied? Is there a target date?
I think they're talking about this spring. I'm not exactly sure.
That's exciting.
It is. It is a beautiful building, a beautiful job. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it looks fantastic. I think it's going to be. I haven't been on the inside yet, but I think it's really going to be exciting to see.
Right.
I think some of the grandness of the lobby, I think, from what I understand, has been restored. So that should be really, really interesting.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, it does bring up a question. A few years ago, there was talk about tearing down Bliss Towers and replacing it with low-rise housing because it's becoming increasingly hard to heat. But that would entail throwing out a lot of infrastructure, a lot of cement and steel and workmanship. And that's what I was thinking about when we were talking about Pine Haven. Might it be greener to just stay where it is and make the necessary improvements?
that's definitely a possibility. Whenever that's been asked, the answer has been that we can't really improve the facility in place for whatever reason. I'm not sure why you can't, but that's what we've been told. And I'm sure as part of this process, that will be explored again. Now, just one other dimension while we're talking about infrastructure. Last year at the Public Works Committee, the Public Works Committee asked Dave Robinson and Dean Knox, who were the Public Works managers, the senior guys, about the county's road and bridge infrastructure. And the question was basically, how much investment over the next period of time are we going to need to bring the county's roads and bridges back up to standard? And they did some work on this, and they estimated $50 million in road work and $50 million in bridge work. Now, that's not all in 1 year, of course.
Right.
But that's what they estimated we would need to spend as a county over the next 20 years to bring the roads up to standards and the bridges up to standards. Now, that's a big number, and that number you've got to keep in the back of your mind as you're talking about other major infrastructure projects like Pine Haven and like other things the county may need to do. So we've got to just keep in mind that just like the rest of the United States, the infrastructure in the county is aging and needs some serious investment. How you do it, over what period of time, whether you do it with operating money or debt money, these are all questions you've got to deal with. And it's all going to be a function of how the county chooses to operate itself financially.
The bridges are especially in a vulnerable position, I think, because part of the problem is trucks that the bridges weren't designed to support go over them because truckers, you know, want to take the shortest routes. And I keep wondering, is there any way with digital technology to track who's going over those bridges and to maybe assess charges for trucks that are too big for them? Because a lot of those bridges are beautiful and are part of our quality of life as a rural community. And if we could preserve them, it would be nice. And we should find out if there's some other way we can protect them.
Well, whenever you start talking about something like that, the concern that people have is you are disrupting the normal flow of commerce and forcing truckers to go different routes. While it may save a bridge, it could lose a job, and it's a really hard trade-off to make. I don't know that we have the technology to track this stuff, even if we wanted to, but I'm not sure we really should go in that direction as much as improve the bridges and spend the money to strengthen the bridges, keeping them looking the way they look as best we can, but strengthen the bridges. Because, there have been stories over the last 10 years of sections of U.S. state highways collapsing.
I remember.
And those kinds of things can happen in the county.
Right.
So I think the solution is not to restrict commerce, not to restrict usage, but to build the infrastructure back to where they're safe.
Now, the governor just announced a big program to repair bridges. Has the county looked at that yet? I mean, it may not even be on paper yet, but are you aware of that proposal?
I'm not familiar with that. I know the state does have money called CHIPS that the county gets that allows us to do some road repair and bridge repair, and there are a lot of grant monies available for bridge repair that we take advantage of.
Right.
But the scope of this thing is pretty severe,
I think from almost every county in the state or in the country. Right?
Yeah, exactly right.
We've had so many years of inattention to infrastructure that that now we're paying double, actually. Yeah, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, a real visible example is the bridge that leads to the waterfront in Hudson. It's in terrible shape.
I mean, that's a different story because it's owned by CSX and Amtrak now, but it's an example of
a blatant example of, I think, the public being put at risk. It's terrible.
So we're going to take a quick break. This is At Issue. We're with Supervisor Art Bassin from the town of Ankrum, and we'll be right back. This is At Issue.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Chronogram, a Hudson Valley publication covering the arts, politics, events, food and dining, health and wellness, and the home.
www.chronogram.com.
The Hunter Foundation makes grants available for first-time homebuyers purchasing an existing home in the town of Hunter. The Hunter Foundation is a nonprofit organization working to improve the hamlets and villages of Hunter. Call Annie at the Hunter Foundation for more information about the Home Ownership Grant Program. 518-589-5050, extension 10, or hunterfoundation.org.
And this is At Issue. I'm Victor Mandolia. Excuse me. I'm Victor Mandolia. We are with Supervisor Art Basson from the town of Ankrum. And Deborah Gilbert is my co-host. We've been talking about Columbia County issues and fiscal issues. But one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about a little bit is when I mention you or your name comes up and in the context of your town, many people are really impressed at your ability to cross the aisle and to work with everybody. And people really hold you in very high esteem. You're a Democrat, but clearly you have the admiration of a lot of Republicans in your town. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that is and your thoughts on that.
It's interesting because when I decided to run for supervisor, I decided to run supporting two Republicans who were running for the town board. And we campaigned together. And the three of us would go door to door and introduce ourselves. And everybody in town just kind of looked at us wide-eyed and said, wow, this is really neat.
Sounds like it was unprecedented.
It was. The Republicans and Democrats kind of working together. I was really lucky in that I got the support of some very, very prominent Republicans who decided that it was time for a change and I was kind of the least worst of the politicians running for office. And so I got some very high-profile Republican support. And my ticket ran against another ticket that included a couple of Democrats. So we were running against some Democrats who were running for the town board. And I was running against them. And I was supporting Republicans against Democrats. So I started my political career being totally indifferent to your political party affiliation. And at the time I said, I don't care what party you're affiliated with. I care about what you think about the issues that affect our town and how reasonable you are to deal with. And so we started from day one thinking that the most important thing was not party. It was the person and what the person thought and how the person dealt with public issues. Temperament's important. A willingness to be completely open is important. I don't think we held a town board meeting with an executive session for 3 years. And we finally had to do one because we had some issues related to personnel that we just had to deal with in private based on what our lawyers were talking to us about. But I think we've had one or two executive sessions in the 4 years plus that I've been supervisor.
That's a pretty remarkable record.
Well, I don't like executive sessions. I don't think they're necessary, and I think that even with sensitive issues, if the people involved are willing to have these things discussed in public, and many of them are, you do this in front of the public.
Right.
So I guess I started out thinking that I wanted to be affiliated politically with the right people, not the right party. And I believe that's true at the county level. I believe that's true at the state level and the federal level. So it's just, you know, it was, I guess, luck that we kind of fell into this situation in Ankrum where the party really didn't matter. And that's
And you've been cross-endorsed in the past?
The first year I ran, it was kind of a brutal party versus party at the supervisor level. The next 2 years, I was cross-endorsed by the Republicans and the Democrats. In fact, I'm very proud to say the Republicans nominated me first last year because they had their caucus first.
In your first campaign, were you running against an incumbent supervisor?
I was.
A Republican incumbent?
Yes.
So those Republicans who ran with you were mavericks along with you?
Yes. They were mavericks, but there were a couple of Democrats running with the Republican supervisor on the other side. So it was really kind of a messed up, mixed up, boy, don't you guys know anything about politics kind of moment. But it worked out well for the town.
Right.
Well, It must have made people stop and scratch their heads and think for a change.
I think that's probably right.
I know that in your town, we were just talking right before the show a little bit about the ridgeline law that you've been working on in the town board. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. People, a lot of our listeners are very interested in the environment, and this is an interesting take on environmental preservation because it's maybe you could explain.
Well, sure. Yeah, we did a comprehensive plan that was adopted by the town board in 2010, and as part of that, there's this little section that says ridgeline protection. You know, we'll figure out designated ridgelines and we'll protect them. And the Zoning Revisions Committee that we appointed in 2010 had worked its way through revising all of the zoning to become consistent with the comp plan. And they basically finished up at the end of 2012. I think that was about right.
And what's the philosophy behind ridgeline protection? Is that part of the anti-hilltopping movement?
No. In Ankrum, we have such a stunning visual, scenic...
It's true. I think it's one of the prettiest parts of the county.
We have lots and lots of rolling hills, and there was a sense that we wanted to preserve the scenic integrity of the town, which was, we think, one of the town's strongest assets. And the idea was to try to develop a zoning law that would protect the ridgelines without prohibiting people from building on lots that included ridgelines and steep slopes. So the original law that was proposed to the town board early in 2013, late 2012, I guess, outlined some provisions for identifying ridgelines that the town board looked at and was not comfortable with. And we weren't comfortable with it because it identified a lot of ridgelines that were not visible from very many places in town. You know, the topography of a lot of ridge lines is such that you can see the steep slopes leading up to the ridge and the top of the ridge. But then the ridge line, the ridge itself is very deep and is a series of undulating hilltops above the view of anybody from a road around town. So we said, wait a minute, if you can't see it, why do we want to mess with it and why do we want to have somebody have to come in and get special
deal
permission
with the regulations and everything?
Yeah, so we said, look, let's figure out what we can see and what we can't see, and why are you excluding steep slopes, which is what you see? Maybe we need to include that. And then the other provision that we had some trouble with was whether this law would apply to everybody, major and minor subdivision alike, or only to major subdivisions, which is what the comp plan originally had envisioned.
It seems like building along a ridge is kind of a no-brainer from a real estate development point of view. Then someone on top of a ridge gets great views, right?
Yes.
I think there are some roads in Ankrum that are developed along a ridge, maybe Simon's Way.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of ridgeline developments that are perfectly okay. There are very few places in Ankrum where anybody has built in a way that would be in violation of the proposed ridgeline law. So it's not like we're trying to prevent this, and the law itself says this law will not make any prospective building lot unbuildable. What the guidelines are is to keep your roof line below the tree line or below the ridge top if it's a non-forested area, to not clear cut but leave screening trees in there to keep your house kind of a color that blends into the background. So these are perfectly reasonable guidelines. But when we identified the 179 parcels out of, say, the 1,200 in town that would be affected, many of the people affected said, wait a minute, you can't see my property from any place around town. Why should I be affected? And so we said, all right, maybe you're right. Let's kind of screen these properties to see who you can see and who you can't see and how high you are. You know, there were some properties on our list that were 500-600 feet high in a town which has an average elevation of 800 feet and 1,100-foot heights as sort of the highest ground. And a lot of people said ridgeline protection means protecting the high ground, not all the ground. And what you guys are proposing here is kind of a townwide scenic corridor overlay zone, which is not really what anybody had in mind. So this debate went on for basically a year. And it was a good debate. And we had a lot of people weigh in on it. And I really like debates like this because it gives everybody in town a chance to think about the issues. It gives the town board a lot of thought, a lot of thought-provoking insight. And we have a rule on my board and that is on important issues, we never do them on close votes. We'd never do 3-2 votes. Unless we have 4-1, we don't pass any law that is of substance. And we don't have 4-1 yet. We're still at 2-2.
Did you pass a resolution to ensure that you have to have a 4-1? Or
no,
is it a gentleman's agreement?
This is just my philosophy. So I just won't bring something to a vote until there is kind of a consensus that we've thought this thing through and we have something that we can all basically support, or at least four of us could support.
So that's part of your leadership philosophy.
Yeah, I guess so. It started when I was chair of the comp plan, where we decided we weren't going to do anything in the comp plan that we didn't, that was a close call. We had 9 members, and I said, we're not going to do any 5-4 votes. These are too important. These issues are too important to do this on a close call vote. We need to have a consensus. And we almost got unanimity on all of the major points on the comp plan. And I like to do that in terms of a town board.
That's
decision.
Comprehensive plan for people who don't know.
Yes, comprehensive plan, right. So anyway,
but to do that, you need the support of your board.
Well, yeah. I think they agree with the philosophy, which, again, is why it's good to have some sensible Republicans and sensible Democrats.
So consensus and very little executive sessions. It sounds like a perfect place.
And lots of dialogue. Lots of dialogue.
It sounds absolutely enlightened.
You also have a conservation advisory committee in Ankrum,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
And maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that works and whether you have found it to be helpful or not.
Oh, it's extraordinarily helpful. We have a very, very dedicated, very hardworking group on the CAC. CAC is Conservation Advisory Council. They're all dedicated and hardworking. They respond to town board and planning board requests for opinions on certain matters related to conservation issues. The chair of the CAC is our representative to the Environmental Management Council at the county.
Right.
And on issues that come up, whether we ask for their ideas or not, they will give us white paper, opinion papers on what they think about ridgeline protection or wind turbines or this or that or the other thing.
Right.
It's been an extremely positive experience for us.
I know in the city of Hudson, there's a renewed push again to have a CAC, and it really seems like it's very helpful to the to the government as a whole.
Now the county has a CAC that's full of distinguished people, and I've been to a couple of their meetings and have been very impressed by.
Well, it's called the Environmental
Management. Now, they presented a list of suggestions to help avoid a fire like the TCI fire a couple of years ago, and the Board of Supervisors has not responded to their letter of recommendations. Do you know why that was neglected?
I was not aware that they had submitted anything.
Oh, it's quite remarkable.
But the paper this past week mentioned that there's a survey of all of the all the properties that hold some kind of toxic substance.
The emergency management people from the sheriff's office are conducting a survey.
So that may well be in response to that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The recommendations. Two other things. We only have a couple of minutes, but I wanted to touch on quickly. You mentioned wind turbines, and so I know you had some issues down there. How was that resolved? Because there were wind turbines that were allowed, or a wind turbine that was allowed to be sited, and then neighbors were complaining that they were having vibrations and other things from it. How did that work out?
Well, we had these two turbines. They made a lot more noise than anybody thought they would make. The town filed a notice of violation saying, you should have told us they were noisy. We would have made you put them further away from houses. The owners came back and said, well, they really don't make noise. These are mechanical maintenance problems. We'll fix them. We said, okay, if you fix them, let's wait 90 days, see what happens, and we'll pull the NOV. They fixed them. The noise is diminished.
Oh, great.
We withdrew the notice of violation, and that was last fall. And there have been one or two or three complaints since then, but by and large, the turbines seem to have settled down.
Oh, wow. Well,
and
that's great.
My conclusion is that there is a shakedown period for these machines that may be a couple of years. And there's a lot of supplemental maintenance that's needed once they're installed to make sure they don't rattle or vibrate or do whatever.
A little adjusting.
We'll find out. Of course, now, you know, you've got everybody's windows shut down and furnaces running, so we'll see in the spring whether or not these things are making noise or not, and we can always decide then what to do next.
Right. And then one other thing is that there was in the paper this past week, I guess, was about a company that is planning on bringing broadband to Canaan. I mean, not Canaan, Gallatin. Which is right next door to you, and serving some people in Ankrum as well. Do you know much about that project?
Yeah, I've talked to the folks who are doing this. This is an experimental startup company. They're using kind of the white space of the TV signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a line of sight service.
It's like free spectrum that the federal government deregulated after the transfer to digital television. So the old VHF band was available.
Right, and they're trying to tap into that to send broadband signals, and it's line of sight, and we'll see how they do.
Do you know anybody who's tried it yet?
No.
Mm-hmm. It's very promising, though.
It is.
It'd be great if it works out.
Yeah.
So, any last questions?
Well, it sounds like you're really making progress in Ankrum, and I wonder, is it less polarized than other Columbia County towns? It sounds like you guys are reasonable. You're able to express opposing points of view, listen, and make decisions in a civilized way, and I think it's remarkable.
I can't really speak for other Columbia County towns, but I think in Ankrum we had a very tough political environment the year before my election, and we had a very tough political environment the year after, and I think everybody sort of looked at that situation and said, you know, we can do better and we can do different. And everybody has been working hard to cooperate and build consensus and try to do the right thing for Ankrum. So I think we're moving in the right direction.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So this has been At Issue. We have been with Supervisor Art Bassin, the Democratic supervisor from the town of Ankrum. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Deborah Gilbert.
And so thank you very much for joining us. And
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And I'm glad that we didn't get snowed in this time. I just wanted to mention that this coming Tuesday at 2 p.m., I'm going to be hosting a show on the spoken word artist and author Maggie Estep, who passed away last week. And we'll have a few of her friends talking about her life and her work, and I'm really excited to be hosting it. So please tune in. That's next Tuesday at 2 p.m. And in the meantime, this has been At Issue. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. WGXE underwriting support is provided by Rip Van Winkle Tobacco Free Action, helping to create tobacco free places for people to live, learn, work, and play. TobaccoFreeNYS.org.
Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties is pleased to announce an art exhibit featuring the work of award-winning photographer Francis X. Driscoll at the Agroforestry Resource Center on State Route 23 in Acre. The Impressions of the Catskills exhibit will be exhibited from January 6th